QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset 600 kilohertz, at a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, which is good. Are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, a couple of announcements. First off, the Trout Fest is coming up. If you're affiliated with CERT or ECS, get a hold of Judith, W6JLM. She'll have some information on some volunteer work there. Also, we do have a ham test session coming up this weekend. Yeah, that's right. This is Tuesday, Sunday, 1 o'clock, Big Bear Lake Fire Station. Got a couple people coming in for their tech license. And if you know anybody who's ready for that or want to upgrade, we'll be there, 1 o'clock, Big Bear Lake Fire Station. Alrighty, one more call. Any other announcements? Topic for the evening, I'm going to do a little more touching base on backup battery systems, backup power systems. Did a little bit last week, and we're going to go a little bit further with that, so... Alrighty, I will now call a roster of the people who are there just about every week. I know there's a lot of people out there that listen. These people check in every week, and this is in recognition of that. They're basically going to be on the list for full time there. I will now begin. WB6CLZ, Mike.
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is WB6CLZ in Irwin Lake.
All right, Mike, thanks for being there. About WB6CIN.
WB6CIN, good evening, everybody.
All right, Sydney, glad to have you out there. You and Mike, really a standard out there for ECS and CERT. Glad to have you with us. How about KA6CIA, George?
KA6CIA, good evening.
All right, George, appreciate you being out there. We're going to give Nancy a try here in Sugarloaf, KE6QI.
603, Nancy says hi.
Well, KE6RJ, Harry, by golly, scared me there. Appreciate you checking in and got you both in here. Fantastic. All right, good to hear you out there. I'm going to move ahead here. KI6SKN, Chris. Okay, nothing heard there for right now. He'll probably join us later. KJ6HCS, Mike.
Evening, Tom, the net. KJ6HCS, no traffic. Check in K6EKX also.
Okay, Mike, I was just going to call his call sign there, K6EKX, and that's Mike's dad. He participates on his scanner. All right, how about KJ6FIL, Mike?
Good evening, everybody in the net, and KJ6FIL down here in Hot Redlands.
Mike, feel sorry for you down there, buddy. I've heard some temperatures, and I know it's that time of year. All right, KJ6KDL, Jim.
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK and wonderful Sugarloaf.
Jim Rosemary, got you both checked in. How about W6GZI, Frank? Yeah, nothing heard. KI6IQA, if we can pull them from the smoker for a second.
Yes, yes, good smoky evening to everyone. KI6IQA.
All right, Kelly, thanks for being out there. K6GVL, Ron in Green Valley.
Good evening to the net. This is Ron, K6GVL, Green Valley Lake.
Ron, don't know how to tell you this, but after the picnic, and I'm already an extra, but I got your cards. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I think we'll keep them on hand for the club. All right, 86PL, Harold Riverside.
Evening, 86PL.
Glad to have you out there, Harold. Let's see if N6BOPN is out there in Pomona.
I sure am. Good evening to all, and have a good net. Thank you.
All right, Ann, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that. How about K6LCS? Clint, Harupa Valley.
K6LCS with some info later. Thank you.
All right, Clint, thanks for being out there, and I know you got a lot of stuff out there, new stuff for us. Appreciate that. How about KJ6MFO? Jay, are you out there listening? Sorry, nothing right now. How about W6JOM? Judith.
Good evening, Tom and everyone on the net. Tom, are you reading me all right?
Okay, K6Q here, Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. You sound okay, maybe a little close to the mic. You want to give me one more audio?
Yes, as a matter of fact, was that GVL from Fountain Valley that I heard a little bit earlier? You have his radio, is that correct?
On our roster or earlier before that?
Russ, was that Russ? He left his radio at the picnic.
I have not heard him or talked to him. Anyway, is he out there? Russ, you out there? I don't hear him. W6GZI is Frank. He's one of our contacts out there. But anyway, all right, Judith. Haven't heard anybody out there. W6KMM, Ken.
I'm going to check in for him. He's just across the room. After the net, would you please give me a call? Because we're going to be in Fountain Valley tomorrow. I can take Russ's radio with me.
Okay. You know, I left my phone number with him. He never called me back. Is there any reason for that, you think?
He called me back, so probably that was the reason. I will check in with you after the net, and we'll arrange to get it, and I'll take it down to him.
Roger, roger. All right, moving ahead. KI6OHN, John, we'll see if he's out there in Big Bear City. Nothing heard. K6YNW, Chris.
Howdy, K6YNW.
Howdy, Chris. Glad to have you out there. KD6LAN, Bill.
KD6LAN, checking in.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that. AE6CK, Victor. Nothing heard from Victor. KA6ROD, Rod. And nothing heard there. KB6LTY, Christy, Apple Valley.
KB6LTY.
Christy, I think Clint's got some great news for us out there. I want to stand by for that. It'd be great. Alrighty, last on the list here that I have, other than I got a couple down below here. Okay, we got eight. Nope, not last yet. AE6TV, Hans. And nothing heard there. Let's see, NQ7RD, Rick and Corona. How about K6 TUX, Ski? Alrighty, well, that concludes the list of the regulars that are in here every week. Appreciate all you being out there, and it's great to have you check in and actually help us with our topics, as we all donate and you guys donate stuff, and that's what makes it what it is. Anybody out there as a guest would like to check in or be on the list or just want to check in, period.
WA-686-UP.
We had a good double there. I think the first was WA-6MQF Bob, and the second was what?
AD6UP, Louis checking in, East LA.
All right. Thanks for checking in, East LA there. Anybody else?
KJ6QDX, Wes from Ontario.
Thanks for checking in from Ontario there. Appreciate that. Any more information on the net, please give me a, if you need more, like to know what we do, give me an email, KF6Q, Kilo Foxtrot 6 Quebec, that would be KF6Q @ARRL.net. Send me an email, send you some good info. Anybody else out there? All right, nothing heard. Anybody can join in any point in time. Well, we got a lot of people out there, so. Alrighty, Roo. Well, let's see. Let's move right ahead here into the DX, see what's going out there on the HF bands. If you guys are tech class, listen up. This is what the general class are doing. Mike, what's up? What's going on out there?
Oh, the same old thing, different day, Tom. Yeah, but we got Bob, WA6MQF here, so maybe we'll get a good follow-up on the DX report. I don't know, we've had so many picnics and tours and working on my deck and meetings that I haven't had much time, at least to keep the hours that you need to keep for working some really good DX. I did do a little bit of listening, and I heard England a couple of times in the morning. Spain also. We did work Japan on CW, which is pretty easy and common, but we did work them. Space weather right now is reporting 80, a sunspot number of 82, which isn't good, isn't bad, it's mediocre. SFI solar flux index of 101. So conditions aren't terrible, but they're not where we'd like to see them. It should support decent propagation up to 17 meters and maybe sometimes getting into 15 meters a little bit. Anyway, that's about my story, and I'm sticking to it, Tom, but let's see who else has got some stuff going on with DX. I know Bob's got something to report. Back to net control. Tom, back to you.
Okay, Mike, thanks. I actually got a couple people besides Bob. But Bob, we're going to hand it off to you. What's happening out there? What you been doing on the DX, WA6MQF? Give us a report if you can. KF6Q.
KF6Q, WA6MQF here. Well, to go along with what Mike said, on the 22nd, I talked to Korea, and Korea and Japan, if you just sort of look that way, and are patient, they're fairly easy to work. Also, I was in the South Pacific with Kiribati Island, that's near Fiji, Tahiti, that way on 20 meters. And then yesterday, CNAKD in Morocco on 20 meters, 14024 on CW. All of those stations were coming in 5-9 here in Big Bear City. That WA6MQF, back to Tom.
Well, thanks, Bob. Appreciate that. Like to do a little Q&A a little while here after maybe the satellite thing about your EME, this thing you're working on. Let's see there. We had some other information. Possibly he's out there. I'm not sure. Jay, are you with us this evening? KJ6MFO. You don't hear him out there. He's also been working a few things out there in the past week or so. Let's give a shout for Chris. He's a very busy guy this time of year. Chris, did you join us late? KI6FKN. All right, nothing heard there. Anybody else out there in the general public like to come back? Any good information there on DX for the week? All righty. Well, hearing none, I guess that's a pretty good report there. We got a few things in there. My third daughter is now actually was in Korea and is on her way to her and her husband's house there in Ansan, China, about 200, 300 miles north of Beijing. She'll be over there for about 5 weeks. And I wish she had a ham license, but she knows the internet. Oh, well. Anyway, all right, let's move ahead here. Let's see. Ah, now we do have our report with the satellites. Clint, what do you got cooking out there?
Good evening, Tom, and Tech Tuesday Net. You know, it's a bad news, good news type situation. Bad news is AO-51. It's been up there for 6 years. A wonderful PR project for amateur radio. Has a dead cell in its battery, another battery at 0.1 volt. But it has been pumping out 850-plus milliwatts for us for the past 6 weeks on the newer repeater pair, 145.88, 435.15. So work AO-51 as we can here for the next few weeks. The battery situation cannot be reversed. It cannot be made better. But it has been great for us in North America for the past 6 weeks. Break for a second. Arisat 1. Everything is operational. The FM downlink on 145.95, operational. The UHF-VHF linear transponder, operational. The CW beacon on 145.919, operational. The sideband BPSK data, 1K data, is operational. So we're working with an inch and a half VHF whip instead of a 6.5-inch VHF whip. The tumbling of the satellite is dramatically decreased since last week, and working the linear transponder has been much more successful for folks. Break for a sec. But if you don't want to get into the sideband stuff, just tune your scanner, tune your handheld, a little better antenna, to 145.95, 145.95, at 9 minutes after midnight tonight. You have a wonderful pass beginning in the, my God, it's going right over us. At 14 minutes after the hour, it'll be right over us. But at 12:09 in the morning, 12:09 after midnight, beginning in the north-northwest, heading towards the east-southeast, they're right over us at 14 minutes after the hour. Break for a sec. Might be in low power mode, so if you know it's up there, keep monitoring. It might be 40 seconds worth of transmissions, followed by 2 minutes of silence. And that is the longest 2 minutes in recorded history. But there are 24 international greeting messages in 15 languages, SSTV images, secret words at the end of those little that the kids talking that you can submit for a PDF reception certificate. So at minimum, just listen for it on 145.95. The project is expected to last 3 to 6 months, and if you've been putting it off, working it, boy, please get out there and work it this week. Tom, that's about all I've got. If you're interested in working the FM ham satellites with low power, like a handheld, go to my website, worksat.com, worksat.com. And my contact info is there, email or call anytime, it's fine. If you're a sideband person, our sideband birds are up and cooking. Hold on a sec. AO7 is working marvelously. FO29, another sideband bird. VO52, wonderful sideband birds and working for us really great this past week. And again, the FM birds are Arisat 1, AO27, SO50, AO51, and you can always hear a packet from the ISS on 2 meter. And that's been working this week, too. It was off last week, but it's been working the last 2 days. Tom, that's all I've got. K6LCS. Thank you much.
Well, Clint, we really all appreciate that. I know there's a lot of different factions to ham radio. That is one, and it's very interesting, and I appreciate you joining us every week, or just about every week, with a good update and what's going on, and appreciate you taking the time out to do that for us. All righty, real quick here, before we get into some battery tech, Bob, WA6MQF, if you're still out there, just a real quick summary of your progress. Bob out there is putting together an EME station. Another thing of ham radio, he's going to be bouncing signals off the moon to do DX, using it as a reflector. This is not Radio 101. Bob, just want to give us an update on your progress.
Tom, W86MQF here. Well, this weekend I worked on a box that's going to mount up at where the antennas are, and in the box is a relay that will route the signal going to the antenna from a piece of HELIAC low-loss cable and the high-power amplifier in transmit mode. And when it switches, relay switches over, and you energize it by supplying 12 volts to this box, it brings up a half a dB low-noise amplifier and switches the relay over to receive mode. I decided to use two coaxes so that even when I do something really dumb, I can't put my high-power RF into my little very sensitive preamp. Anyway, pretty well got that built this weekend, and I'm waiting for fiberglass rod. I'm mounting my antennas horizontally because eventually there'll be four of them. And coming in from the side, if you use conductive material, it attracts the radiated pattern pretty badly. Anyway, that's it. Back to Tom, WA6FQF.
All right, Bob, appreciate that. I know that sometimes you're in the area to check in and sometimes you're not, so just keep me informed, all of us informed, how you're making progress with that. I know we do have a couple other people over here that do EME. But it's always pretty neat. Very, very long distance DX. That's about 250,000 miles each way, so it's about a half a million miles away. That's DX. All right, good deal. Well, Michael, I thought we'd just go a little bit further on with lead-acid batteries, and I know we didn't really get a chance to cover a lot last week, and we'll probably repeat a little bit there. Michael, do you have a backup battery that's lead-acid, or do you have one of those little, I'm going to call them AGMs, or is it a new technology lithium hydride? Or do you have basically none at all?
Well, actually, Tom, I have a little battery backup pack that we used at Field Day. Take it back. That we used, yeah, maybe it was Field Day last year. I'm not sure. We BBARC has used it before. It has two sealed lead acid cells that came from Ford EVs, Ford EV type batteries, and they are sealed, and they're about 90 amp hours each. And they are charged by about 110 watts of solar.
90 amp hours each. Now, that's pretty hefty, I have to say. What would you guess to be their physical weight?
I would say they weigh probably 50, 60 pounds each. They are heavy son of a guns. I don't think I care to move them very much. That portable pack that I have is too much for me to handle. So it kind of just stays in one position in the garage.
Roger that. And just for all of you who have just joined us this week or didn't get a chance to listen to last week, we're just taking through the steps of technology. Started out with the basic lead-acid battery. That's what you got in your car, your vehicle, most vehicles anyway. Basically what they call a flooded lead-acid cell. Mike there with a sealed lead-acid battery, the SLA. It's basically sealed. Don't have to worry about tipping it over. A little bit harder to service if you had to. A little bit more delicate in charging because of the fact there is no venting. That would probably have been the next step up. Then I think technology as far as the lead acid moved into what they call the acid glass mat. If you're a jeeper, if you're an off-roader, and you've ever used an Optima battery, and those suckers are really durable, they can be upside down, inside out, and do just fine. I do believe those are an AGM, acid glass mat. The fluid is replaced primarily with a fiberglass mat that's saturated with the solution. And then we get into the newer technology of the super lightweight, high-tech stuff. Very lightweight, very durable, and extremely expensive. Anybody, Mike, have you ever dealt that? Or maybe, I don't know if we got Kelly still out there. I know he's a good off-roader. Let's see, we got anybody out there and comment on the Optima batteries. I do believe those are AGMs, but I could be wrong. Anybody with any info on the Optimas?
See us?
I am.
Sealed it.
Yeah, by Al.
Oh, okay, we got a lot of info here. Let's see. I had ACS, FIL, LAN, and I do believe CLZ. Let's start with CLZ. Reverse order, I think he was in there first. Mike, go ahead.
I don't know that much about the battery. I know they're expensive as hooey, but I do have my little Toyota pre-runner. I needed to change batteries on that, and I decided I had had a good week or something and decided that I was going to go with an Optima. And it's like individual cells, as I recall. I haven't seen the thing for a while. I probably should check it. Check everything else, but Toyota does that for me. I'm getting lazy in my old age. But yeah, I do have an Optima in my little Toyota and Optima, and it, you know, I've had no problems, had it for probably 5 or 6 years with no issues.
Yeah, I know they're very expensive. Do not have one in my Jeep, probably will. I've got one that died, got it from an unknown source, anonymous source, let's put it that way. We are working on some battery revival methods, and I'll keep you updated on that. But I do believe all of them, even our lead acids, are separate cells. These are definitely separate, different containers there. I'm going to hand it from here over to LAN first, and then we'll get the other two mics. KD6, LAN, go ahead.
Yeah, I really don't know that much about them other than, boy, they take one heck of a beating. I had them in a big plow truck, and I went through two regular 12-volt batteries, and that thing just kept on ticking. And forgetful me, I forgot to take it out of the truck and put a replacement in its place when I sold the truck, but yeah. They're good batteries. They are expensive, a couple of $100, but they are a good battery. KD6LAN.
Hey, Bill, appreciate that. And we have two mics in there. We have ACS and FIL. I'm going to give it to ACS first. I'll catch you in a second. Right one's Mike. KJ6ACS. Mike, go ahead.
This KJ6HCS. Yeah, I run a dual Optima battery system in my Jeep. Yeah, they're durable, strong. I didn't run the Jeep, but maybe once every other month or every 2 months or something, I just disconnect it, and they're both, they're just keeping a charge, and I haven't really put a lot of use on them for the last year or so, but boy, they are, yeah, I believe in these batteries. If you can afford them, that's what you want running an off-road vehicle because they're very durable. All right, back to net control. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, Mike, appreciate that. Yeah, if you got two of them in there, definitely reliable, dependable, and awfully expensive. But you know what? Reliability sometimes is not cheap. KJ6FIL, Mike, go ahead.
Okay, boy, oh boy, I guess I'm on the wrong end of this thing. Yeah, we're running the Optimas. The only problem is if you run the things down, let them sit too long and they go low, they're very, very hard to try to bring back up. And most of the time, if you run them below 50%, they won't come back back up to life. Is there a trick that I don't know? Back to you, KJ6FIL.
Well, you know what? That's one thing we're going to talk about. And you know what? There are a couple of tricks there. And I know that as a battery gets below, this is just an FYI. I'm passing this along from our research. Did mention this last week. A lead-acid battery, basically, that chemical technology, whether it be glass mat or whatever, is just right about 12.6, actually 2.1 volts per cell. And then, of course, you have six cells for a car battery. And that's on a full charge. They will vary between 12.6, 12.8. You know, it's actually a 2.1 and a fraction. So if it gets below 12.6, then it's starting to discharge. It's showing that it's discharged. 10.5 volts is critical mass for a battery. Let me reset. The battery can be discharged if you're having a hard start or whatever you're doing. You can get down to about 10.5. Really don't want them to go below that, but they will. Guarantee they will. They will, if there's a load on them, they'll drain to zero. Actually, and they do actually drain a little bit by themselves. Over time, that's what you want to, if you got it as a backup and not in a vehicle, you want to keep a little trickle charger on it. But anyway, we're going to get into that. What happens when it gets below 10.5? Anybody else out there with any comments? We had just four good ones there about the Optima, and we'll leave it open just one more second for anybody else with any other comments or questions.
MQF.
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
Roger. Well, I had the enjoyment of living in a totally solar-powered house for over 10 years, and I worked for a company that made components for solar systems. And I'm somewhat familiar with the lead-acid type batteries, and the type to get in your car are, if you go down and just buy a whole off car battery, are the least capable of deep discharge. They added antimony to the lead plates in the battery, and that allows the battery to go deeper in discharge, and those are referred to as deep cycle batteries. And if you abuse the battery, the sulfate from the sulfuric acid will flake off and settle on the bottom. And once it separates itself from the plate, it becomes inactive because when you put a current through the battery, that stuff's no longer connected to either one of the plates. I have a lot more, but I'll wait until you finish your presentation, Tom. WA6MQF.
Well, Bob, a couple things about that. Yeah, as far as the deep cycles, you're right. Antimony, I think, is even added with a lot of stuff. The deep cycles have thicker cells. Deep cycles are meant for a longer cycle. Car batteries are made for the quick, immediate discharge to start your car. I'm going to say it's more of a waffle pattern they have on the lead to get more surface area, whereas the deep cycles, and antimony, I think they add in all of them because lead by itself is kind of soft. Maybe a little bit more with the deep cycles. And what happens with Bob, what Bob's saying there is sulfation. Let me reset real quick. We have two things that make a battery really not go on forever, other than the fact that it's never going to last forever no matter what. You get a sediment in the bottom, but if as you start to discharge and if it stays in a discharge state, the chemical status starts to create sulfur crystals. You'll get a layer of sulfur crystals on the plate, which block any current from going through. The longer it sits in that state, or the lower the discharge, the more the crystals will block any current. This will do two things. First off, it keeps it from obtaining a full charge. There might be a little current getting through there, but it's not charging the entire chemical strata there. So that's bad. There are ways around that. We're going to tell you how. But, yeah, and the other part is as a battery wears, everything doesn't recycle 100% inside, and you'll get a little sediment in the bottom, and that's why they keep the plates off the bottom. You would be amazed that one of the major differences between a 60-month battery and, say, an 84-month battery is the plates are higher off the bottom. Anyway, anybody else with some comments? We're going to get into sulfation here and what happens there. Any questions, please come back. KF6Q.
KJ6KD.
Okay, we have the repeater ID in there. Go ahead.
Yes, KJ6KDL. Just input on the Optima batteries. I just checked their website. They have three yellow top, which they're all, by the way, AGM batteries. The yellow top is a deep cycle battery. The red top is an AGM classic replacement for automobiles and trucks. And the blue top is a marine version of the battery, but they're all considered AGM. And the deep cycle claims that it can recover from a near total drain, but it doesn't say a total drain. KJ6KDL.
Hey, Jim, had a little feedback there, but that's okay. You came through. Yeah, and that's one thing. Like they say, the standard automobile start needs a lot of juice right now. And if you want to have that same juice producing continuously, it's going to run out quicker. Whereas the lead, the deep cycle, or in the case of the Optima, two different types of deep cycle. The marine is just another deep cycle, possibly just maybe a notch thicker. And that's what I mean. They get the plates are thicker, less waffle pattern. However, they can chemically reduce down without losing all the material because the plates are thicker. It's a chemical thing, but we're not going to go there tonight. But anyway, so the thicker the plates. If you get into the forklift batteries, commercial industrial batteries, or lead acid, those lead plates, and many of them, in a cell, in one cell, are up to 1/4 inch thick for the fact that they have so much drain down and chemical, whatever they call it there, that has to recycle. Anyway, let me reset. Anybody else have any questions at this point?
YNW.
Chris, go ahead, YNW.
I'm just talking about batteries, you know, the traditional kind that we had years and years. We've got a bunch of, about eight. We drive about four of them at any one time. And Honda has a battery that's probably 1/3 the volume of ones we have in our bigger trucks. And those batteries just wear out so much faster. I don't know if there's some insulation component to the bigger batteries, but I'm not stating a solution. I'm just stating a problem that I found. K6YW.
LAN.
Okay, yeah, Chris. Anyway, yes, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, some of the research that I've done on it, I've talked to people that build and rebuild batteries. And one of the things that they warned me about was do not confuse deep cycle with cold cranking amps. If you have a starter, let's say, that draws 350 plus amps, you do not want to be starting a vehicle with a deep cycle battery. You will ruin the battery in a very short time. Conversely, if you're deep draining a battery slowly, you do not want a high amperage battery, you want a deep cycle battery. So there's something to watch out for. If you're using it on a boat where you need the deep drain, you want a deep cycle. If you're using it in a vehicle or in an application that requires high amperage for short periods of time, you want a high amp battery, not a deep cycle. KD6LAN.
YNW again.
Hey, Chris, before I hand it over to you, yeah, Bill, with all the stuff we have here on batteries, just want to actually add to what you're saying there. The deep cycle and the high energy output cold cranking automobile battery, entirely two different structures of batteries. The plates are totally different. The deep cycle, like you said, will not produce a lot of current. You can have both batteries that will have, let's say, 600 amp hours capacity. They can both have that. The thing is the deep cycle will not produce a lot quickly. You know, it'll damage it. It'll get hot trying to produce as much as the cold cranking. And cold cranking is actually a rating, not a style. Just to clarify to everybody out there who's listening, it basically means that's good down to 32 degrees. When you get out there in the cold, of course, we're up here in Big Bear, we know that doesn't matter. It's a lot colder than that. But yeah, two different kinds of batteries. One is good to go a long time with no alternator input or charging going on. The other is to give you that quick boost in the morning. Do not confuse the two. Very good, Bill. And there's a lot of technology behind that, but I think we've pretty much got that covered. Appreciate that. Go ahead, Chris.
Just dovetails what you said. The word is, if you have a deep cycle battery in a car, it'll start it for a while, but not very long. K6-1 to be.
Roger that. They're not designed to produce a huge flood of current at one time. So, but anyway, and that's the way they are. So, little thing there about batteries, and I know that I had a couple, and that I have their marine batteries or deep cycle, and same. If you look on them, they might be a little bit different by one manufacturer, but they're basically the same. A deep cycle marine battery, we'll call it that. Essentially, when you get below a certain point, the sulfur crystals will form. There are two ways to get rid of that. One, there is an electronic way of using a high voltage, and I say high, not 13, 14 volts, but basically about 35 volts pulse charge. It's called a desulfator. They will work, and it takes longer depending on how bad the battery has sulfated or how bad it's been discharged. Let me reset. This is one method, and it's pulsed, and the reason I say it's pulsed, it's that keeps the plates from getting hot, over hot, which will warp them. And it still may take a week or two to break down the sulfur crystals. Now, if that battery is fairly new and just got drained way down, once those crystals are gone and they go back into solution as sulfuric acid, regains where it was, and believe it or not, that battery can be almost as good as new. I'm not going to say 100%, but it's so close that you're not going to know any difference. Now, there is one other method, and I've read about this, so I'll describe it, but I have not tried it. And anytime you're working around a lead acid battery, number one, wear gloves, wear protective clothing, wear goggles, protect yourself. Remember, the acid is very dangerous and can hurt you. And we do not, as a disclaimer, have any responsibility for what you do. Okay, there, I said it. But if the battery on a typical, whether it's deep cell or not, one method is to reduce the fluid in the cells to the top of the plates, mix a solution of Epsom salts and water, warm water, very warm water, so the Epsom salts dissolve. There is a mixture ratio. Email me and I'll give you a link to that. Epsom salts is magnesium sulfate. It's a chemical. What that chemical does in solution, it'll break down the sulfur crystals, and you can actually do this, from what I've read, up to four or five times if you actually let your battery get that far down four or five times. I would say after once it would be a learning curve thing to pay attention to. Let me reset. Thing with the Epsom salts, of course, you're dealing with the fluid and and doing that. You have to be very, very careful. That actually will work without the desulfator electronic process. The two in conjunction will actually be great. A lot of these smart chargers that maintain a battery actually have a built-in desulfator circuit. besides a maintaining circuit. This is something that's not witchcraft, it's something new. So if you've got a battery kicking around and it's not five or six old of use, but it's five or six old because you used it two times and the thing is just sitting there and you can't get it back, there's a chance it can be revived. Any questions, please come back. KF6Q.
Matt, WA6FQF.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I thought I heard somebody else in there. Just a couple of more comments on the chemistry and the lead-acid type batteries. If you take a battery and say it's dead and you take it out and just set it on the ground and put a new one in to get going, that thing will completely discharge. When you have a stone-dead battery, the liquid in it is almost pure water, and water will freeze. And when water freezes, the ice expands and breaks everything up, and that's a way to kill a battery, is to let it be discharged and then freeze over the winter. That's it. Oh, yeah, safety thing also. When batteries are charging, oxygen and hydrogen bubble out of the vent caps if they're a vented battery. Do not pull a jumper cable off of a battery that's been on charge. Many, 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 many stories about batteries exploding exist. I'm sure I've actually blundered into that, and just that's a super safety rule. WA6FQF.
Hey, we did have somebody else in there, and I'll turn it over to that person in just 1 second. Yes, and actually, if you are, it is bubbling like that, back off the charge current a little bit. You don't need to charge it that fast. You really don't. You're actually hurting the battery. You're getting it very hot. You're heating up the cells, and it's a very dangerous condition. So, not recommended. Believe it or not, a good slow charge over weeks. If you can take that battery out there and just let it go, slow charge, you can actually bring that up slowly if you choose. There is a whole method to that. Not necessarily that one, but I mean, that's a safe one. But anyway, like I said, email me at kf6q@arrl.net. I'll direct you to some really great information. I had somebody else out there with a question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it was KJ6FIL. Tom, yeah, I was going to ask you, could you send that information to me? Because, yeah, I do have one of those electronic desulfators and that, and, boy, I'd love to get all the information I can with as many batteries as I deal with on a monthly basis.
Yeah, Mike, I got to tell you that I have two almost brand new, I don't know how many big, they're big. They're, I'm going to say 75 series, maybe bigger, that went totally dead. Just got two more. By the way, those two that I got, put them on a charger and they would discharge. Anyway, put them through this slow charging process, which once it breaks that sulfur crystal thing down, if you've got all the time in the world, you can put them on there for a month. It may work. If you got a desulfator, it'll definitely work. If you put Epsom salts in, it'll work quickly. But anyway, with that, I have just picked up two more identicals. These are Interstate batteries. They're great batteries, and there's no warpage on the plates. They're in good shape. I have one fully recovered right now. Both these batteries were about 1.2 volts total. Yes, total, not per cell, total. And I thought, well, let's see what happens. I've got one almost fully restored. Got to discharge it and run it through some cycles first. I'm working on the second one. This is something I have set up. I've got actually a whole other charger I'm putting together that will just do that purely on its own. I'm getting there. But, yeah, I'll send you that, I'll send you that stuff, Mike. Any other questions out there?
YNW.
Chris, go ahead.
I'd like to talk quickly about alternators, if appropriate, K6YNW.
Yeah, roger that. Go ahead, because we rely on those with a vehicle to get that battery back up. And, you know, that's number one use of a battery we have that we all use is a vehicle. Go ahead.
Okay, I had my own auto repair business, and the word is definitely put in a new alternator, have the battery charged up. And I've seen a few cases when that wasn't done, the alternator really took a hit. Now, some alternators might be a lot stronger than others, but it's a gamble. K6YNW.
Yeah, roger that. You know, and a lot of this information that we get are, you know, I've tested some, I have not tested at all, and everybody's going to get varying results, but there is a, you know, if you've got a battery that's definitely been used, and you know, I would focus on deep cycles. Car batteries are definitely not meant to last a long time. They're definitely going to last for a while, but with the structure that they're made, they're made to be basically a throwaway item. The deep cycles, if they're taken care of, will last longer. They're built a little beefier, a little stronger, and they're a little bit easier to recover. They're actually worth, in my opinion, they're worth, you know, a little bit more worth recovering. But that's me. But anyway, yeah, FIL, I'll send you that info, and not a problem. Anybody else out there, any questions, comments, or suggestions, please come back. KF6Q, Tech Tuesday in the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club Repeater.
LCS.
HVS.
Comment, FIL.
Okay, in the order, let's go with LCS first.
Just a comment. I have not listened to a Tech Tuesday Net where I have not learned several things in this quick hour. This is a very important, very valuable reference to amateur radio, and I hope we hear announcements of recordings of these sessions available to the masses. Great work, Tom. Great work, participants. This is one of Southern California's most valuable nets, K6LCS.
Clint, appreciate that. Also, I want to make a note there that what you do yourself is helping us out now for a couple of months. Great information, bringing in a whole other group with the satellite stuff. So appreciate that. And it's a group effort. Some of this stuff is stuff we've researched, and some of this stuff Mike and I learn ourselves over the period of time doing research, trying to bring the stuff out there. And of course, then again, there's everybody out there listening that's got stuff they've experienced. And it's a group effort. Appreciate that. Hope everybody does learn something each time. Even if it's, I learned something tonight, it was boring. Sorry if that's that. Sometimes we can't help it. Anyway, there was one person right after LCS and just before FIL. Go ahead.
N6HVS. Copy.
Yes, go ahead.
N6HVS and Landers, I run my house and my whole ham radio system on four of those monstrous burgundy-colored Trojans in the hall. They run my 350-watt amplifiers, my 500-watt HF linear, and then I have 229 truck deep cycles in parallel to run my transceivers and TV. And I have various power devices to charge those up with. But you're certainly right. Deep cycles are great for continuous use. The car starting batteries, short period of time linear amplifier service with a slow recharge. The main thing about deep cycles is that they can take a hard recharging, and the starting batteries are not meant to be charged that hard. You can use them, but you can't do that much with the continuous duty. N6HVS.
Okay, appreciate that information. And if you would enlighten us on your Trojans there that you've got, how many years have you had them in service, even if they're intermittent duty, and how are they holding up for you?
They have been in service 3 years, and I'm expecting maybe six. I'm very careful with them. I have them in an external box that's vented. The bus bars are opt cable. I've done it all to make sure I didn't got much voltage losses, but they've been good up to now. So anyway, 7 days, I got somebody calling me on another frequency, N6HVS.
Okay, thanks for that information. Yes, go ahead. I believe FIL.
Yeah, okay. This is KJ6 FIL. I had a comment for the other auto mechanic out there that was talking about replacing the alternator. Definitely, anytime you replace an alternator on a vehicle, you must make sure that the battery is at a full charge before you put that alternator into service. If not, you're going to overload the diode in it and just bring it straight down and burn out the alternator itself. I've run across it a couple of times. I got a brand new alternator, but my battery was low, and you know, I expected the alternator to bring the battery back up. Well, that's not what's supposed to happen. If you ever read the instructions on an alternator, it always says you must bring that alternator back, or that battery back up to full charge before you put the alternator into service, or you will damage the alternator. Just a comment. Back to you, KJ6 FIL.
Comment. Hey, real quick there before the comment, I just want a personal experience on that, and I have to say I guess I'm lucky. When I have replaced an alternator in the past, generally it was because it wasn't keeping up the battery, and the battery is too dead to start the vehicle, so the first thing I had to do is recharge the battery anyway. I guess that's just luck or dumb luck, but did that and then put that in there, so I guess that's why I never had an issue. Anyway, go ahead, comment.
WA6MQF here. First, since you were on alternators, the rotor in the center is a rotating field magnetism, and it dips its energy to create the magnetism from the battery. If you put a new alternator in a car and the battery that's in the car is still dead, even if you tow the car down the road, spinning the engine over in the alternator, it won't make any electricity until there's a little bit of electricity in the battery. Enough on that subject. I also had the Exide L16 batteries that the other gentleman there was talking about, and I kept my batteries in the house. I vented them to outside, but I wanted to keep them where it was very convenient for me to add water. They use water, and if you let the water bubble down and air gets on the plates, the lead will oxidize, and that'll act like an insulator. But I got 6 years out of my Exide L16. I had a very similar station. I had a Tentec 500-watt linear, and I had L16s are big, giant 6-volt batteries, weigh about 90 pounds each, and I had 6 of those in series parallel in my solar-powered home in Nevada City. That's all, Tom, WA6MQF.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all this helpful information out there. You know, one thing, if you have a battery kicking around, here's an old wives' tale, or an old garage man's tale, whatever you want to call it. And I actually heard this from my wife's uncle, and just paid attention to it, even though I found out later the why and the what. Now, I've heard for a long time that years ago, if you set a battery on a concrete floor, that it would discharge itself. Well, a couple things there. Way back, the cases were actually wood-based and non-plastic. And yes, it would cause some kind of a solution through the wood. It would do that. Second thing that could happen still today is the coldness. It depends on how cold that concrete is. We get stratification going there, and that also is not good for a battery. So it's good to keep it off of the concrete on that purpose. And the third thing is, yes, a battery will actually fully charge to 12.8. Good to keep it just at a trickle charge if it's a backup battery, if you're using it, no matter what it is. In your car, of course, that's not possible. But if you're using it for backup ham use, a good friend of mine, W6KMM, has got a couple batteries in his garage for backup. Got a little wall wart on there, nice little trickle charge going there because it's very low current, can't produce too much to hurt it, and it keeps them up. And that's a good thing right there. a lot of the AGMs or sealed lead acids will go dead and they'll just not come back. They're actually recoverable. I got a couple I'm working on and my many things of my to-do list, but I'm working on the lead acids first. And just to report to you what everything I've done, let me reset. I have had great success. If the battery was not totally wore out and destroyed in the beginning, if it was a deep cycle and actually had the durability to accept that, like I said, this challenge was the greatest. I had a couple of them all the way down to a total of between one and two volts. It's actually about the fourth battery I've pulled back. We're working on the fourth one now. And that's basically considered to be garbage. It's not going to come back, but you can. I haven't used the Epsom salt thing yet. Going to try that probably. I'll let you know what happens. Right now I'm working on this electronic steel with a desulfator. Do not have one. Mike, I'd like to know a little more information, too, about where you got yours. There is a circuit. If you're a builder, you can build your own. A lot of good stuff out there. Be careful if you buy one. There's a lot of gimmick stuff out there. So, anyway, getting close to 8 o'clock. Oh, I think we've gone past. Anyway, anybody else out there, any comments or suggestions, please come back.
CIA.
George, go ahead. KA6 CIA.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on what I have in here from my radios. All my radios, the HF and the 2 meters, and I got 220 and scanner, all of that run directly off of a 12-volt deep cycle battery, and the radios are all hooked directly to that. And then I run from the, I have an Astron power supply, a 35, and that works as an excellent regulated charger. I have the two wires that run down for the positive and the negative to the battery, and that keeps the battery up at all times. When the power goes off, it doesn't even blink because all the radios are hooked directly to the batteries. The only thing you have to be careful of is when you have to put diodes so it can't in line, so the battery cannot backfeed into the Astron. And that's the main thing. And the diodes out of an alternator work perfectly. That's about it, K6CIA.
All right, George, glad to hear that. I rebuilt my alternator last winter, and I actually recharged my battery first because it was just too dead to start the truck. Lucky me, I guess. Put a new diode pack, saved the old diode pack. Believe it or not, a lot of them were fried, but got a couple of them there, so now I know what I can use them for. I knew there was a reason that sometimes you just, I know, you, if anybody out there knows me, you know, I don't throw anything away. There's a reusability for a lot of stuff. I believe that's a good thing. That's actually, I think that reduces carbon footprint, but don't get me wrong, I'm not a green guy. Anybody else out there, please come back. KF6Q.
More comments, WA6MQF.
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
The system that the last gentleman just described is very typical for microwave backup on the broadcast. And the beauty of that system is, like you mentioned, there's no switching. You don't have a loss in power if the mains go away. And by putting that diode in there so it can't conduct in the backwards direction, you protect the battery a little because there's about a third of a volt of drop between the 13.8 and the power supply and the battery voltage. And so you have sort of a limiter as to how hard you charge the battery. As the battery voltage comes up, it gets closer to the 13.8 minus the 0.3 drop across the diode. You just bring the battery up, but you don't overcharge it. WA6M2F.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, the voltage is dropped across the diode. I understand that. A lot of others out there may not. It just means that you put a diode in line and it conducts in one direction and blocks it in the other direction. Actually, when it conducts in the one direction, there's a little voltage drop or loss across it. Very, very, very small. It's very typical. It's unavoidable, but and sometimes it's actually a very good thing. So, all right, well, I'm going to do last call here for comments and questions and suggestions. do appreciate everybody joining in this evening. And if you're listening out there and didn't join in, I hope we helped you out with something, we can help you out again next week. One last call here. Anybody out there with questions, suggestions, or comments? All right. Well, real quick there, Mike, any final comments?
Wow, Tom, another good Tech Tuesday. Yeah, I also learned quite a bit from these Tech Tuesdays, not only doing the research, but, yeah, great net, and let's keep it up. Back to net controls, WB6CLZ.
Hey, Mike, and we try to keep a little diversity there and keep things going, so I know sometimes I even get bored, and I'm the one doing it. Yeah, that's terrible, huh? All right, anybody else out there with comments, please come back. All right, they're either, Mike, they're either gone or asleep. That's okay. Appreciate that. QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Any questions, please email me at kf6q@arrl.net. Just want to throw that back in there. And we are closing the net at, I'm going to say 2,000 hours and 6 minutes. We definitely appreciate everybody joining in. All those of you that join in every week, appreciate that. Great information, great comments. We get a lot of different opinions out there and questions, and it's all a great thing. So everybody, do appreciate that from our side here. All right, and hope to see you next week at this time, at actually, no, not this time, at 1900 hours time, Tuesdays, every Tuesday if we can, unless there is some emergency traffic going on. So this is KF6Q, Net Control, Tech Tuesday.